Hello, my name's Natasha Naji. I'm the granddaughter of Bill Naiji, and I'd like to welcome you to Ubiad. Alright guys, here we are at the main gallery, and pretty much this is our old living quarters. This is where my grandfather lived as a child, and grew up hunting and gathering around here. You've got all the best hunting areas around you, floodplains, river systems, small creeks, your rocky country, as well as your open woodlands. But looking up in front of you, you've got all your artwork, and this is pretty much what you can find around this area. So all your artwork up there, you've got some turtles, some fish, goanna. You might be able to see a crocodile every now and then, but crocodiles were such a big animal, and you wouldn't really like to paint those up, because when Aboriginal people paint, they paint to full size, and they paint what they see for that day, what they've caught, or sometimes what they would hope to catch.
So this is almost like a kitchen menu in a way.
Yeah, it is. It's your menu board of all the food that you can find in this area. And it's a pretty healthy one too at that.
And if we look up really high on the main gallery, we can see some very small rock art. And it's incredible to think how it actually appeared up there.
Oh yes, we've got some rock art that's right above us on the ledge. That's from the Mimi Spirits. Mimi Spirits, we believe, are magical beings that live in the cracks of the rocks, and they only come out when it's nice and quiet and really calm, no wind. And pretty much we believe that those Mimi Spirits helped us by teaching us to paint. They pulled the rock down, paint on that rock, and put it back up there, so the next day when we come down, we seen it and we knew how to paint certain animals.
Ubiad is an outlier on the edge of the Kakadu National Park, and it's one of the richest rock art sites in the world. I'm here in the main gallery with Natasha Naji, granddaughter of Bill Naiji. Bill Naiji was a senior traditional owner from Kakadu. Born in the 1920s, he grew up living a traditional life, hunting and camping throughout Kakadu. In later years, he was instrumental in the creation of Kakadu as a national park, opening up his traditional lands to lease back to the federal government. Bill Naiji was also the last surviving speaker of the Gagaju language, an indigenous language from the northern part of the park. These days, his granddaughter Natasha carries on the tradition of interpreting the park to visitors.
My grandfather, he was the traditional elder for our area, the Cannon Hill area, Bunitj clan, and he's now passed that on to my father. But he was one of the main men that helped to establish Kakadu as a national park, and throughout the park you'll find stories by my grandfather telling you how certain things were created and sometimes why there's rules. My grandfather was the best storyteller. He'd always have a good story to tell, and you're always holding your tummy in fits of laughter at the end of the story. Just being able to see my grandfather just sitting there, he was such a big man. I guess at the time I didn't realise it, but I have so much love for him. I had so much love for him. He has passed on since then. I still got that love for him. This place was where I found him most of the time. And every time I came up here, he'd tell me the story about the Namatgon sisters. And there'd be this big crowd of people around him. And he'd just have this big smile on him like, I don't know, he was going to live forever. He had this secret or something that he had to share with everyone. He pretty much seen that Aboriginal culture was dying and wanted to try and save it the best way that he can, and opening up arts and art sites like this and our art sites over in our country, as well as opening up certain tours throughout Kakadu, has helped to share our culture with tourists. So I guess I got big shoes to fill.
One of the stories Bill Naiji passed on to his granddaughter was the story of the Namatgon sisters. This story is the story of Ginga, the saltwater crocodile. The story has special significance to Natasha because the saltwater crocodile is her dreaming.
We're now here at the Namatgon sisters, and I'm looking straight up at them, the two sisters with the pretty much punk hairstyle up there. They're pretty important. They were tricksters in their day. They'd jump in the billabong and cover themselves with grass and scare each other, pretending to be crocodiles, especially for food. When they were hungry, they wanted to scare the other ladies away from the bank as well. And an elder found out about this little game they were playing, decided that they needed to learn a lesson, be taught a lesson, and were changed into crocodiles. And that's where you look on the back of a crocodile, just behind his eyes you find two bumps, and they represent the Namatgon sisters. Crocodiles are a big part of the Kakadu National Park. That's where I step into it. My dreaming is the crocodile, and that's why this is pretty important place, the Namargon sisters. With the dreaming, it's pretty much our animal. That's what we become when we pass on. And in life, we need to look after that animal, protect that animal.
Crocodiles are an important part of Kakadu National Park, and most people will see one when they visit. Up until the 1960s, crocodiles were hunted to near extinction. But these days, the population has increased, and they've moved further inland in search of new territory. Gary Lindner is a crocodile management officer in Kakadu National Park. Gary grew up around crocs. His father, Dave, caught Sweetheart, the 17-foot crocodile, which you can see in the Darwin Museum. Cahill's Crossing on the East Alligator River is a hot spot for crocodiles. Large salties live in this stretch of river, which is also popular for fishing. Parks and Wildlife regularly survey the river as part of their crocodile management plan. So let's head down to the East Alligator, where we'll take part in some croc survey work with Gary and the team.
Hearing swimming there?
Yeah, he's really struggling.
Yeah, and it's just like a fish, playing a big fish. Come on, that's it. Come on. So Jono's actually put the harpoon in there perfectly, just behind the skull on top of the neck. Open the mouth. What we're trying to do is get the snout rope into the jaw. That's it. Okay. Matt, you just keep it on his eyes now. Well done.
So basically the crocs just took tried to take a bite out of the side of the boat.
Yeah, so sometimes you'll get bits of aluminium and teeth flying, and that's just to the great jaw pressure. The crocodiles have got a lot of closing pressure, but surprisingly opening pressure is not as great.
So we've got the croc tied up to the side of the boat here, and we've got a noose around his jaw, and we're just going to try and haul him in now.
Tie down, point down here. Now he's making a noise.
So what's that noise mean, Gary?
Very unhappy croc. It's growling and groaning, and it's letting us know that it's not happy. And, yeah, basically a defensive sort of aggressive noise, but purely
defensive. So Gary's just tying the croc to the side of the boat now. He's inside. So what about these strong-looking legs here?
So these are the front legs. And on a crocodile, they've got what we say, they've got five fingers. Mm-hmm. And they've got two soft toes with no fingernails. Mm-hmm. And then we've got three with claws. And on the back foot, he's got four toes. So three with claws and one soft toe. So
can we touch him?
Yeah, actually feeling quite soft.
Oh, okay, I'm just patting the side of him right now. Oh, wow. He's really soft.
Yeah, and
I can feel him breathing.
So you can just see the barbs on this harpoon here. It's really superficial. The barbs are just under the skin, but they're really good at holding fast because the skin is pretty, while it's soft, it's also pretty firm.
Yeah. And Gary, I notice you've got his head tied pretty securely to the side of the boat there. Is that so he doesn't thrash around?
Yeah, you'll see the side of the head here. This particular section here with the bigger males is used a lot with fighting when they're hitting each other like that. And there's a lot of, with the big bulls, you'll find a bit of scarring and stuff along here where they've been hammering each other when they're not biting. And if that hits your leg or something, I've known one bloke to be in traction for three months.
Gary, it's really when you touch the teeth that you can tell what a powerful animal it is. They're really strong, sharp teeth.
Yeah, they've basically, I think there's 70 or more teeth in there. And look, you know, an animal this size is needle sharp. And well and truly designed for grabbing onto something and holding. You know, you see them grab a fish and they give a couple of really good bites, incapacitate the fish. You'll get quite large crocodiles that are specialists that are grabbing pigs, horses, cattle.
Well, they're certainly incredible animals, especially up close. We'll get the opportunity of meeting more crocs when we get to the Yellow Water region. But before we leave the East Alligator, there's some great walks to do in the area. The Manare Rainforest Walk is a short walk on the edge of the East Alligator River. There's also another two-hour walk that starts near the upstream boat ramp car park. Our next stop is the Norlangee region. Continue down the Kakadu Highway and turn towards Norlangee Rock, and I'll meet you there.